You're listening to the Missionary Perspective Podcast with veteran missionaries Eric Johnson and Joshua Mead. We're glad you could join us. We trust this podcast will be both a blessing and a challenge as we relate topics in world evangelism from a missionary perspective. Now, here's Josh and Eric.
So I'm with Ron and Donna Bragg, missionaries. Originally, you were going to Niger, right? Niger. And then you ended up in Senegal for several years, became the African director for BIMI. And now you're recovering from cutting your finger off there. Look at that. Well, let's go back to early days. Tell us where you grew up a little bit. And let's work our way to Senegal and some of how God led you to that area. And just kind of recap a little bit of your early days. And we'll talk some ministry here.
Honey, go ahead.
You start.
Well, both of us were raised here in Carthage, Missouri. And the Lord allowed us years later, after we'd been in Senegal, to start a church here. And we were classmates. And then I went into the Navy and I thought, well, wait a minute, I better marry that gal. And so I did. And then we went to school, and I thought I could never get through Bible college because I played football and baseball here and didn't study. My coaches were my, you know, my teachers.
Right.
And then we got to go to France. And we spent a little over a year there, and beautiful place in the Alps. And my wife made the comment that after we'd been in Senegal a while, she said, that was like going from heaven to hell.
And we had a we had a group come in, a Bible college group come in, and the mission director for the college, he arrived in Senegal, and it was in Dakar. It was nice. There's a little more greenery in that area.
Yeah.
Well, the further north you get, it gets more and more brown and desert.
Yeah.
We get out of the car and he said, Josh, he said, you didn't tell me this place is desert. This is ugly. It's awful. Where are we? You know?
Yeah.
So was that kind of your initial reaction when you arrived to Senegal? So initially your plans were to go to Niger, right?
Right.
The influence of Dan Truax.
Yes.
Yeah. And the door closed there. And so we ended up in Senegal, and that's exactly where the Lord wanted us to go. And I asked the Lord one night in my prayer time, I said, Lord, I would like for you to send us somewhere where there's nothing, no Baptist churches. And I say to the young missionaries now, that was kind of a dumb prayer because he did just that. And we went to Senegal after language school in France. And we spent almost 20 years there and 16 years. And no regrets. No, we didn't have a convert for the first 4 years.
Yeah.
And I had churches, you know, pastors writing me saying, you know, we want to support soul winning missionaries. And yet I was out every day trying to do exactly that. And I remember one day when I was back in my office trying to figure out if we had enough money just to quit and fly back home. Well, now I tell missionaries that when you have a lack of money, that's also God's also in that. And so we ended up staying. But during that time, this knock came on my door. And four Muslim men came into my courtyard. And they said, Pastor Bragg, we're ready to get saved. And so, boy, I'll tell you, it was a long, tough haul. But it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be back there today.
Sure.
I could never have done it I could never have stayed if it hadn't been for her. A missionary has got to have a strong wife, and the Lord gave me that.
Did you always feel, Donna, like you wanted to be a missionary, or was it something you both, that journey of God, because you, it was later in life, not later in life, but in your later 20s.
I was 26 years old.
When you, did you surrender kind of at the same time, and were you open? What was the process for you? Because Senegal, now today, Senegal's still a tough place to live, but it's advanced far from where it was, yes, even when we first started. But back to when you guys went, I mean, I've heard stories of just, you know, living out in that area, not an easy task. So where, how did you come to just learning to accept living in a place like Senegal and thriving there? Because your ministries thrived in those early days.
Well, yeah, we were members of Windsor Park. Windsor Park Baptist Church in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Okay. And Dr. J. Harold Smith was our pastor.
Oh, okay.
And the church had been praying. They'd had prayer meetings for 2 years praying for a revival.
Yeah.
And I believe Ron and I are a product of that prayer meeting.
Yeah.
Because the Lord just started working in first in my life, and then it went on to touch him too.
Yeah.
But he just started showing me sin in my life. And it got down where, I mean, he was dealing with me about my appearance, my dress, places I was going, and playing cards, and just different things. What that was his dad was a gambler, and okay, it was bothering him,
right,
and I didn't know it.
Sure.
And just different things like that. And I can remember one night I said, Lord, are you going to take everything? And I went, and I went and got down on my knees in my bedroom, and I said, I was just overwhelmed because the Lord was dealing with me, but I didn't know what it was. He'd always put his finger on what it was. And he said, I want you to be a missionary. And I said, he's in refrigeration. And, you know, I thought, how's this going to work? God's called me to be a missionary. When I got up off my knees, I told Ron, I said, honey, I said, the Lord's called me to be a missionary. And I said, he said, well, honey, I'll just pack up my tools. And he said, they need refrigeration men all over the world. And I'll, right, that's what, that, you know, he was a young Christian.
Yeah.
He had gotten saved in that church.
Okay.
At that age. So anyway, I knew the Lord wouldn't do it that way. So the Lord began to deal with me that he was going to take Ron's life. And I lived that one day. I just thought I was going to get a call, and the tears.
That was an encouraging thing.
Sure.
Well, you know, and then he showed me to go to the jail in Fort Smith, Arkansas, that he wanted me in home missions.
Okay.
And so he did that until he brought Ron around.
Okay.
And so I was going to the jail, and something he didn't tell, when the Lord was calling him, well, working in refrigeration. He was down in his store, and they had this electrical
problem.
Machinery was not working right.
Okay.
So he pulled the electric box off the wall, and it just shorted out. It's 220 volt, and he had fire over his head and fire at his feet, and everything in the box was melted, and he was not touched.
I had my arms around it.
Yeah.
And he wasn't touched, and he got it all fixed. And the store manager was at the door, and he said, "Brother," he said, "somebody was with you because you should be charcoal."
Wow!
And so it
blew the transformer clear off the telephone pole, started a fire
in the ditch. So he got the thing fixed, and then he got out in his truck to come back to Fort Smith where we lived, and he got shaken so bad, and he pulled over, and he said, "Lord, I'll go."
Wow!
God was calling him.
Yeah.
But he was afraid of it. He knew he had to go to Bible college, and he did bad in school. So he was struggling with that.
Yeah.
So God was dealing with him without me knowing it. And then one night, he'd go out on jobs and be out for several, a week or so. And he'd come in on weekends. One of my, Corey was real sick. And the Lord showed us to walk by faith, and I didn't have the money to take him to the doctor. And he was testing me. And so Ron came in and I said, honey, Corey is sick. And I said, I don't have the money to take him to the doctor. And he knew we were trying to walk by faith. And he went back into the bathroom and he had been reading Reese Howe's, was it Reese Howe?
Reese Howe's Intercessor.
But anyway, where he, or either C.T. Studd, but he had to leave his family and go to Africa without his family. And he was, and then he was kind of working on him. And he said, Lord, I just can't do that. And so anyway, he went to the bathroom. He said, Lord, he surrendered again. And then our son was just fine after that.
Yeah.
We didn't take him to the doctor or nothing. He was working on Ron too.
Yeah.
But anyway, we sold our house. We gave my crystal and different things I gave to people
most of
I loved.
Away. Yeah.
And later they told me they were prayer reminders. They would pray for us when they used it.
Yeah.
Which that was a lot better than taking crystal to Africa. I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And, So we sold our house to this lady, and we were just rejoicing. We had a big party because, you know, we were trying to sell it ourselves. And she came the next day, and she backed out after we, you know, and we thought, what are you doing, Lord? She was just going to assume our loan.
Okay.
Well, that day, there was a teacher that came in, and he wanted to buy our house. He gave us the equity. And so we had a couple of $1,000 that we could use to get to school and get settled. So the Lord was wanting to do more for us than that. So anyway, he always is in everything that happens. And when I got to college, when Ron got to college, I worked so he could help. I mean, he had the government military help, but I also worked.
GI Bill.
Yeah.
And to make ends meet. And then the second year of his college, or I guess, it was his junior year. Ron said, I want you to stay home with the kids, he said. And God, some of the people in Fort Smith started supporting us. We didn't even, you know,
we weren't on deputation.
We stepped out trusting the Lord, and he made a way for me not to have to work.
Right.
And then we went to France, and that's when the door closed to Niger. They weren't letting anybody in, and we had to find a new field. And we knew the Lord had prepared us for the desert. So him and JB went up to the embassy there in Switzerland, and they were even looking at Syria.
Oh, Syria and some of those places.
Yeah, they were just. Yeah.
And, you know, there was guys in the embassy standing around with automatic rifles, you know. And JB said, Ron, I think we better pray about this one. Which we did.
Yeah.
And,
so anyway,
they were ready to give us a visa that day.
Yeah.
So, you know. And there was somebody in the school, in our language school, that was going to Dakar.
Okay.
And he said they really needed missionaries up on the desert there. And so JB and Ron went on a survey trip, and we were still in France. And that's
tell us about that, because you ended up landing in the wrong airport or something, wasn't it?
Well,
yeah, that was more time.
Well, tell them about getting your pocket picked. You got off the plane, and him and JB were downtown Dakar.
One of the favorite things over in Senegal, the sidewalks are packed with people.
Yeah.
And they'll pick your pocket so quick, and you won't even know it, you know. And Brother Godfrey, he would walk a few steps in front of me, and then I'd yell out to him. I said, Brother Godfrey, you got a guy that's right behind you ready to stick his hand in your pocket. And he'd turn around and confront him, you know. But It was an experience.
When you got off the plane, honey.
And we got off the plane.
And you were downtown Dakar.
And we went downtown Dakar. And it was Friday, which is Muslim prayer day.
Right.
And the streets were full of people praying.
Yeah.
And I told Donna, I said, you know, no one's here to meet us or anything else. And I said, Here's Islam that's in control, 98% of the country. And so we finally went up to help Brother Godfrey get settled in Luga.
Right.
And then we went on up to San Luis, and they told us it'll take you months to rent a house up there.
Yeah.
And so we went up there and rented a house in one day.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, it didn't have any doors, didn't have any windows, didn't have any electricity, none of that, those good things that we all enjoy here in America. But gradually, I mean, people would walk in our house at night, you know, and of course, we didn't have any furniture. We didn't bring anything with us except a box. And those were some exciting days. But my first piece of furniture I made was a breakfast table.
Okay.
And we'd take that out in the street in the evening.
Oh, it was the benches.
Huh?
The benches, not the table.
Okay.
You made the benches.
We made these benches and we took them out in the street.
Right.
In the evenings to talk. The people are curious, you know.
Right.
They said, are you a Catholic or what? I said, no, we're Baptist. And they said, I don't know what a Baptist is. I've never seen one. And so we was able to explain it to them. And
yeah.
Some of them followed us for a while. And then most of them just turned their back on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
I remember when we, one of the first years I was there, I was the director for urbanization, works as a government position. He was coming out to inspect the land for our building project. And as we're driving, he said to me, now you're here as a missionary. I said, yeah. He said, you're trying to convert people. Huh? I said, well, I don't really convert anybody. That's up to God, but I'm here to teach the Bible. He said, well, the reason we allow you here, we're a Muslim nation, but the reason we allow you here is because we don't convert. You're not going to have any Muslim converts.
Right.
And of course, God has other plans. It's the reason he sent you there. So you spent several years before seeing anybody get saved.
Right.
But what was that kind of the initial response? Because we get asked the same question. Who are you? Are you Catholic?
Yeah.
We don't use the word church on our building because it's too associated with Catholicism, but we use Baptist because Baptists have a pretty good reputation.
Yeah.
And it began with the you guys who started the work up there. And when I was talking to one of our national church members, we were talking about our building and all that. He said, you know, to me, he said, I would recommend that you don't put church on your sign because you'll never get a Muslim to come in. But go ahead and put Baptists on because the Baptists have a good reputation here. And people ask us, well, what is a Baptist? And we tell them, well, and I think it's the same what you did. We tell them we just believe the Bible and we teach the Bible.
Yeah.
And today there's a group among the Senegalese, the Muslim, called the Ibadus. The Ibadus only follow the Quran. They don't follow Serintuba. They don't follow any of the brotherhoods in Senegal. And they don't follow the hadiths. They only follow the Quran. So when we say, well, we only follow the Bible, we don't have a pope. Each individual church is you know, answerable to Jesus. And they'll say, oh, you're Ibadus then. You're like the radical Muslims who only believe the Quran. We say we're kind of like that, I guess. We're a little radical because we moved all the way here to tell you about Jesus. So what was kind of the initial, you mentioned a little bit, but how did people respond to these white people moving into the neighborhood? Obviously curiosity, but what was kind of, when you're building relationships, some people might have been sincere in the friendship, some people not. So how did you kind of build those relationships? Was that basically how you started the church, was just relationships
just, and sharing the gospel? You know, having services. A lot of times, you know, I'd have services and my family was the only ones there.
Yeah.
But those early days were exciting days when you knew certain people that were coming to your services were coming just to gain a knowledge of your house and other things so they could rob you.
Right.
Which they did to us several times. Mm. And
one of the first fellows that he really poured his heart into, that he thought was going to be one of these preacher boys. Just, he stole our whole month's support. And he was out. We knew he had done it. And he had bought him a lot of new clothes and things, you know. But we couldn't prove it or anything. Right. And he never come back. Yeah. But it was, this was a blessing because, you know, we had four kids, maybe five at that time. And Kelly, she was in the Reading Her Bible. And Ron says, well, they sold our checkbooks and everything. And Ron says, I got to go back to Dakar and close the account and reopen another because they got our checkbooks and everything. And so Kelly come out with this verse about count it all as done.
Yeah.
And he said, my daughter wants me to count my support as done.
I said, I'm the spiritual one around here. I said, this little girl can't tell us how it's going to go. And I went back to Dakar. We always keep our gas tanks full.
Yeah.
And so I went back to Dakar, not knowing how I was going to get back up there, really.
Right.
And went into the Citibank office and told them what had happened. And the guy come out and he said, well, you got a telex this morning. And I said, well, I only get one a month. And I said, that was last week. They said, no, this is for you. And a man in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and his wife were praying one night. And they said, we need to send the Braggs $5,000.
They had sold a piece of land.
And they sold a piece of land, and they said, the Braggs need this money. He didn't know anything about the robbery or anything
else.
And
they said, they told BIMI to send it directly to us. Don't wait for our support to send it to us. And so God had worked prior to the need to supply what was stolen. And it just showed me that, you know, we think we have to pray and ask God to do something, but he had already worked because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
wanted to show us that kind of, that faith that, you know, he's there and he's going to take care of it.
And that's one of the things I wanted to ask is what advice do you give to younger missionaries? And I think it applies to pastors who go through discouragement, but especially missionaries who face betrayal from nationals they work with or just difficulties. And I think that's part of the answer is you see God in it before it
even happens.
You've just got to understand, first of all, that this is the place God wants you. If you have any doubts about that, they will not stay. And we knew Senegal was the place that God had sent us. But I told him more than once, I said, Lord, I think you've made a mistake on my behalf, you know. And then Dr. Godfrey came in one day and he said, Ron, how are we ever going to be famous missionaries working in this place? And I just thank God for, like I said, for a wonderful wife that stood behind me when she saw me so discouraged. And I always say to the new missionaries, discouragement is not a sin unless you stay discouraged.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just a daily walking with, and boy, over there, every day is different. I mean, you have things happen that you'd never have happen here. But we've been married almost, in April will be 60 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And we have no regrets.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful, wonderful walk. And we're still involved in a little way, still involved today.
Yeah.
And we thank God for the new missionaries that's come, Josh here has done a fabulous job, and we just look to see great things happen in Senegal before we ship out to heaven.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that one of the things that helped me was God had worked surrender in my life in that church in Arkansas before I went to Africa. And of course, I just followed Ronnie. God showed Ronnie where to go.
Right.
And when we got there, you know, there was a lot of, especially sickness for the babies and things that are stressful. And because I had already totally surrendered to the Lord everything, then I knew He was in control and He would guide us. I literally was in the Merck manual and where there is no doctor all the time. And that I just, the Lord was so near to me and so real to me that I could let Him help me. And that's really the key to being in a hard place is that you have a close walk with the Lord.
It is. My wife had the same worries as a mother, is just any sickness. And she would always contact her sisters who are older than her and get advice for medical things. And the further along we got in Senegal, she'd start calling them and they would say, Julie, I have no idea what you're dealing with there.
Yeah.
But the Lord always allowed, with other missionaries that were there, there's always been a nurse, somebody on either another team or somebody there that's American or Canadian that had medical background. Yeah. And it was just God, for Julie, she realized one day, God has always had somebody here. Because with medical terminology, it can be tough when you're at the doctor's trying to figure out what they're saying. And so always having somebody that we could go to for a second opinion and somebody who was American or Canadian again was always a blessing to her. And so I know that's definitely a big thing for women facing that.
And even having a baby.
Oh, sure.
Because I went to Africa pregnant.
Oh, right.
Yeah, from France.
Yeah, we had all our babies in the States. And I
had
stories.
My last two over there.
Okay.
And Madame Gomez was midwife. Yeah. And I was searching for a doc, a doctor or somebody, and I thought maybe he'd have to deliver. And I thought,
I was reading the book on how to deliver babies.
But we found that Madame Gomez, and so, you know, I was slapping mosquitoes on a peanut straw mattress, you know, delivering, and I got malaria the day after because when your body's down, you get malaria.
Weak.
I had both my sons with her, and she did a super job. But I knew if there was any complications, I'd end up in that dirty hospital.
Right.
But God took care of it all, and He just makes the way. And then all the other missionaries, I was the first one, and then they followed using her.
Yeah. How would you, Brother Bragg, how would you kind of, Senegal, one thing I remember when we first started, when I was in Bible college, you would come and preach at the college, you would preach at Fostoria.
Yeah.
And even in candidate school, you would always, your emphasis to the missionary candidates, and I took this to heart and implemented this early on, was one of the blessings of being a missionary is how much time you get to spend with family and work together as a family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've seen missionaries in different places where maybe there's not, like Senegal is a place where you don't see response right away. And, you know, what are you supposed to write to your churches and things like that? And sometimes I've seen men just get so dug into doing work and busy that they leave their family behind.
That's right.
What were some things you did in a difficult place like Senegal? I mean, maybe you were forced always. I love that we're always with family. We're always together. Yeah. We do things together as a family. What would be some recommendations? Maybe touch on that for young men going into ministry.
When we went over, we didn't know that one day a week at least you ought to, you know, do something different.
Yeah.
And we had a beach, nice beach, about 2 miles from our house.
Yeah.
And so on Fridays, we'd take the kids and Brother Godfrey's kids, and we'd all go to the beach and roast wieners. But at the start, you know, I was so worried about what my churches were going to say.
Mm.
We put every minute of the week in the ministry. And even though we was having 3 meals a day together and family devotions, there's got to be a time when you can just do what you want to do. And, of course, ministry, that's what we were there for. That's what we wanted to do. And there was times when we was out at the beach, we would feel backslid, because we had a beach to go to. I said, we've got 500 miles of beach here.
Nobody's on it.
And nobody's there but us, you know. And so, and then we had a good vehicle. And I do not really know if there's a way to prepare a missionary family to go to a place like Senegal. You've just got to know from day one that this is where God has called us. And regardless of what comes against us, this is where we're going to stay. And I thank God for all those years and all the friends we've made and the new missionaries that's come along. And Josh told me this morning that or yesterday that BIMI has 50 continuous years of ministry in Senegal. And I think the longevity and the consistency of our mission, I think that had a lot to do with it.
Absolutely.
And it's not winning 1,000 souls in 1 year. And we'd read letters from other missionaries saying, how many was saved? Well, we wasn't having that, so we felt bad, you know.
Sure.
And yet God sent us to exactly the people that he wanted us to be with.
Yeah.
And I argued with him a lot. But
it was, we had more women saved, and it had to do with when the ladies worked in my home to help me with, I was teaching school and everything.
Yes.
And another thing, the women, they need to zero in. There's seasons where they have their children, and then they get up older, then you can be more, have more time in ministry.
Right.
Some missionaries, they want their wife out there with them, and I think that's a mistake when they have to homeschool and everything else that they need that time with the kids. And but I would help people that come to the door. I mean, but even then, I would tell them, my kids are in school. You need to come after 3. They understood that, and they accepted that. But anyway, I won one of the ladies in my that worked for me, and then she's the one that went out and pretty much brought a bunch, her family, and she'd witness and get them coming, and we had a ladies' meeting. And but the men were, now Maggot's husband would come, and he never would, I really believe, he heard a lot, and he agreed, but yet it's the system.
Yeah. I've sat down with that family. They've always been so good to us when we built the building there. Of course, we're right behind where their house is, and we've helped, they're great family. They're always so friendly.
Yeah.
I've worked with one of their sons for a while and even been able to share the gospel. And she, till this day, she'll give testimony that she's a believer. She does.
And I really believe she is.
Yeah.
And she even, she prayed. I think she had 2 girls.
Okay.
And did she have another girl before she had the boy?
Think so. That probably.
And she prayed, and she asked God, and she said, "God told me He's going to give me a son."
Yeah.
So, and there was one time when she lost her money for the market, and you know, there it's gone.
Yeah.
And she said somebody found it and came to her door, and they said, "Is this yours?" And she said, and she prayed. She asked God to help her, because she had lost, and he was out. Her husband would work out at Matam. And somebody had found it, and they gave it to her. And that's unheard of.
Well, I'll tell you, since I've been in Senegal, there's the two biggest things I noticed. Where Jesus said, you know, I've sent you to labor where other men have labored, and you're building on what they've done. And the first testimony was, I was talking to Malik Fall, who's one of the first Wolof pastors.
Yes.
And he worked with Paul Bramps and one of the other missionaries there with a different mission. And he became one of the first pastors in Senegal. That's Wolof. And he was sharing with me his testimony. And he said, as a young man, I would walk back and forth to school. And he said, I never noticed this building until I began having these encounters with desiring to learn more about Jesus, and he met a Christian somewhere and ended up getting confronted with the Bible. And so he's having all these questions. And he said, I was walking to school one day and I look up and there's a sign for La Mission Baptiste, for the Baptist mission that you had started on the road frontage mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
He said, I never saw it in my life, but he said it was right at the moment when I'm having these questions that I saw that sign. So he went in and began reading the books there. And then later, he hadn't gotten saved at that time, never came to church, but he read some of the books. He moved to the Capitol and met the Bramsons with a connection through the Capitol, and he ended up getting saved. And so just being there as a witness was part of his journey, of you just being there, part of his journey. And now he's probably made the biggest impact in Senegal through the gospel with his radio broadcast and all that, just gospel-wise. And now our pastor, Malik Jope, he's the lead pastor of the church there. His dad was Adama Jope, who came into the mission asking for money because they lost everything when they fled Mauritania because of the skirmish in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And he began his journey of when he came in. I know Brother Linquist is there. You might have still been there when he first came.
We were.
And I think whoever it was, one of you gave him the answer when he asked for financial help. You said, well, we don't have that, but your kids can come and any of the books are free and we'll try to help with the education and things like that. And he came back a few months later when he couldn't find work and figured, well, I might as well go back and read some of those books. He read every book in that library and sat down with a Quran in one hand, Bible in the other, and he got saved. And that was about a year of him having no work so he could read every book in that library. All of his sons got saved. The family kicked him out of the home when Brother Linquist showed up to do the baby naming ceremony. And the grandma had the imam there. Brother Linquist showed up, and that was when it came to a head that they said, oh, you're serious about being a Christian. So they kicked him out. But all that to say, his son Malik, who's now our lead pastor, not only in December, there were 50 people in church, and we baptized three. And in December, there were about seven that we saw saved. And this is while we're back in the States, all that taking place. But we're reaching what we began teaching online in Wolof. And that's grown since 2019 to where we're reaching about 1 million people per month.
Wow.
With the gospel in the Wolof language. Wow. And that all goes back to in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you put up a little building there and had Christian library and just received people. And through that, you never saw that result.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's what's happening in Senegal right now. And anyways, it's just a testimony, I think, for any missionary, wherever you're at, your calling isn't to see a bunch of people saved. It's just to make Jesus known. Maybe a bunch will get saved, maybe a bunch won't. But.
And your calling is to stay by the stuff.
Yeah.
And when things are going well, praise the Lord.
Right.
When things are not going well, you praise the Lord. Yeah. And it took me a long time to find that truth.
Yeah.
And old man in my mouth's drying up, in Fort Smith, Arkansas, gave me a proverb that said, the devil pushes, the Holy Spirit leads. And so, you know, when you're being pushed and pressured, you need to stop where you're at until you feel the Holy Spirit leading you forward.
Yeah.
And that's been a mainstay throughout all these years, you know, because the devil wants you to push you down the wrong road.
Certainly. How did you make it work as a team? Because you're still like whenever anybody talks about team missions, your team was the go-to. Like you guys made it work, and you had such a wide range of different backgrounds. I think each of you are in four branches of military, right?
Right.
Each of you are in four different Bible colleges, but you made it work.
And, Brother Godfrey and his family, we worked together all those 16 years, and we never once had a crossword. And for Baptists,
we didn't live next door.
Sure. For Baptists, that's a miracle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And but brother, I saw right at the start, Brother Godfrey had so many abilities that I did not have.
And you had ones that he didn't
and
have.
I had some that he didn't have.
Right.
And so we just, it's just like putting ice cream on apple pie. It just worked.
Yeah.
And we consider them really family.
Yeah.
And
well, Linda said, told me, she said, "You're the sister I never had."
Right.
So we still, I just got a card from her yesterday. Or she had, I sent her a birthday card.
Right. Yeah.
We love them. And they're closer than some family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've heard so many stories of just of different events that took place and you guys working together. And it's, you don't see that too often on the mission field. And I think you mentioned it, just recognizing your gifts and abilities and then complementing one another. And I think a lot of younger missionaries are looking for that, whereas maybe some of the older generation kind of just went out there and did their own thing. And you guys pioneered a work in Senegal, but at the same time, you made it work with the team there. And I think that's what a lot of younger missionaries are looking for. And what was some of the, you know, because obviously you never had a cross word. Obviously, if there would have been conflict here and there.
Well, there was some conflict with some of the other missionaries.
Sure, yeah.
But I call this heavenly sandpaper. When you get someone that is hard to deal with, God wants to, you know, use you. You have to be forgiving. You have to be long-suffering. And then it gets to the place where you can talk to them.
Right.
You earn that through what God shows you, doing the things that are unreasonable.
Yeah.
And so everyone on the field, you don't choose who you serve with.
Right.
So if God puts you with somebody, he's either, they're going to be a blessing or a challenge.
Sure.
And I call it heavenly sandpaper. And you need that too.
Yeah.
And so
when you are with somebody that's more of a challenge, then that takes more
grace,
intentionality in how you're going to approach working.
Absolutely. And we always had all the missionaries for the holiday meals, like Thanksgiving and Christmas. And, you know, pretty much it was at my house, but, you know, pulling them together.
Right.
And it is difficult to find a turkey in Senegal.
Yeah.
But we found one.
We, our first turkey, I couldn't believe it. What the price we paid. We all chipped in together. We paid three times what you'd pay in the States.
Oh, yeah, more
and,
than
that. We opened that up, and it's this little bird in there. And
the little tiny thing.
It's like beef jerky, and it was, what is going on? So we import our own. We put our turkey in the suitcase. We freeze it, put it in a suitcase, and we fly it back. Oh, very good. Well, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up there. After Senegal, you became African director for BIMI. That's when I met you in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And you were up at Faithway, where I went to Bible college, and really had a huge impact in my life, in how, you know, we chose Senegal before we met you. But then, of course, God just put us in your path. It was your son we were going to work with, and then led us to go with BIMI. And I look back and see God in every little detail of what church we ended up, what college I went to, and then how we chose Senegal. And then within the few months of us saying we're going to Senegal, we meet you and we meet some of the other leadership at BIMI and with, you know, Brother Godfrey and some of the others.
Yeah.
And so as African director, how many years were you in that position?
I think 21 years.
Since 91.
Okay.
And we had 50 years last year.
There were countries that you were able to open up, right, that we had.
Yes, Uganda's one of them.
Right. Yeah, you were telling me a little bit about Uganda. And just share a little bit about, because maybe Senegal's not for everybody, but some of the other countries in Africa, where are there countries that you were mentioning last night where a missionary could go right now and just have an open door of opportunity that they should consider?
Uganda is one.
Yeah.
when I went in there, I was by myself. I didn't, and people would see me with a handing out tracts or something. And they'd want to know where's church going to happen tonight.
Oh, wow.
And of course, they had been persecuted so terribly by dictators. And they said, Pastor, we just want to go back to our fields and work and go to church. Yeah. That's all we want.
Idi Amin.
Idi Amin.
Yeah.
And so.
And then you were mentioning Namibia. Am I pronouncing
it? Namibia is a country just above South Africa. And Angola is the country next to it. Those are wide open countries that a missionary can go in and start a work there without any hindrance from. It's really a burden on me. It has been for ever since I was there. I went up there.
Burkina Faso.
And no, not Burkina Faso. I went to Burkina Faso also.
Yes. Right, right.
That's another place.
Oh yeah. I have a friend who's in Ouagadougou, and he's telling, he writes me, and he's leading Muslims to Christ every month.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. But yeah, it's wide open there. Yeah.
But it was just a wonderful journey.
Yeah.
And every day is exciting because you're not going to have 2 days alike. And 1 year we had the Christmas cantata.
Yeah.
And we had live animals. And you talk about funny. It was the funniest Christmas thing you've ever been to because nothing worked. And the animals wouldn't do what you told them to do. But, you know, after I'm not from a Christian home. My dad was a drunk, and I thought, you know, there's nothing really that I could ever do for God. And that was 50-some years ago, and I'm looking for heaven every day and excited about it. But so far, he hadn't taken me.
Well, there's more work for you to do, influence to have. Right. And we appreciate you. Our family loves you. And you've been such a blessing to us all throughout our ministry and God's calling and just giving advice and guidance all through the years. And I always reflect, whenever I was discouraged, honestly, I would reflect, go back and reminisce on stories you would tell about how long you were there and the difficulties. Yeah. And even, you know, my wife has been encouraged with just some of the stories you would share. Well, we appreciate your time, and we'll be praying for you and your family and for your health. And
pray I don't lose any more fingers.
And, boy, we just appreciate your ministry and your impact you've made, not just in Senegal, but for Africa and for missionaries. And on behalf of all the missionaries you've impacted, we love you and we thank you.
We love you all.
And Brother Bowman, right now is doing a fabulous job.
He sure is.
And opening up a lot of new countries.
Yep. And he'll do anything for you if you need him. He's there to help you fulfill God's call.
Yeah.
And I love Brother Bowman. And if you're a young missionary thinking about a mission agency, you couldn't have a better guy on your
leader.
Side.
He's a great leader.
He is. He really is.
And we love him to death. I was really, I didn't want to turn over this work to anyone because I was having such a good time.
Right.
But it was time.
Yeah.
And my health has gone downhill. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm just looking for heaven every day.
He was pushing so hard with trying to keep preaching, and I'd be up all night with him.
Oh,
and I had a heart attack. And it was stress.
Wow.
And that God is it. He said,
"Yeah,
okay, honey, I got to quit."
I said I'd never use the word quit, but I will use the word the Lord took us to a new ministry.
Yeah.
Transition.
Yes, transition.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now we're in another one, no saws.
Well, old missionaries don't die, they just fade away.
They just fade away.
That's right.
That's it. Yeah.
No, your legacy will live on, and we appreciate you. Well, thank you so much for taking time to do this interview, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.